This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another special guest episode. I am super excited to have Mr. Brad Parker from Form Piper on the show today. So this is going to be a fun one because Brad is currently working in the SaaS business, right? Software as a service. But Brad is a 20-year veteran of the retail space. And then in 2019, he formed Form Piper, a retail financial management platform, and basically focused on helping other retail companies with their finance, their finance management, all the things that retail companies tend to not do very well. And then in 2021, he was running 4 locations retail, doing $20 million in revenue, 150 employees. And then somewhere around there decided to move just into this space. So we're going to have a conversation that's going to be a span of what he learned from retail, being in that business, to now SaaS, doing business to business, the lessons as a salesperson, as a leader, as a manager, what he's seen out there in the world. So it's going to be fun. Make sure to check out this full episode and part 2 that I know will be a blast as well. But Brad, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
I appreciate you having me. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. So again, like I said, I am excited. Like from the moment we first chatted, you're in this role that more people can realize or relate to relative to the kind of people that I speak to or the kind of audience that I have on the sales side, right? Like a B2B SaaS type of sale, but you come from this retail. Let's just start. Like, what did you learn, let's say, from the retail world that you were in that applies and is universal, let's say, from a sales? Let's start with sales and then we'll get to leadership.
Yeah, in retail, you know, I think in sales, in all sales, you want to keep your systems and processes simple, right? So whatever product you're selling, there's certain metrics that you should be tracking in order to drive success with that sales program. You know, so when I was younger and I would work with my sales team and they would come in, if they had a goal, you know, we would set their goal for the day. Let's say it was $5,000. That would be the goal I would give them. Hey, run out there and sell $5,000 for me, right? Well, that's not helpful, right? Obviously, the salesperson knows they're there to execute sales. So what you have to do is give people actionable items that they can do to go out and drive success with those sales. So in my retail space, you know, we had presentations. So you needed to do a presentation, go through that presentation. If you did 30 presentations, you were going to close a sale. Or you had to get finance applications, you know? So if I gave my salesperson a goal of 4 applications and I knew that we were running a 50% approval rate or a 75% approval rate with a 50% close ratio, I knew that they would close a deal. Well, if that average deal was worth $5,000, now when they come in, instead of saying, hey, go get me $5,000, I say, hey, go get me 4 finance apps. And every time you get one, I want you to come talk to me and let's high five it and let's get this thing done. So what I was able to do is take that same concept, and I tracked everything on Excel spreadsheets, had scorecards, you know, they'd come in, we'd review the scorecard. So as I moved over to the SaaS space, which is a completely different sales cycle, sales process, you know, in my retail business, people are calling, they're walking in the door, they're filling out forms, all marketing seemed to be magical and work. You come over to the SaaS space and you're trying to reach out to business owners. Well, they're not looking for Google ads and they're not filling out the forms at the highest level as say retail. So in the SaaS space, you know, it's all about at least for my business, we make cold calls, right? We're calling into the retail space. Each SDR has a goal of 100 calls a day. We know if they make 100 calls a day through the course of the month, they're going to book 30 demos. Half of those are going to show and we're going to close 35% of them. So if I can get my team to make 100 calls a day, they're going to get 5 closes a month. Like the math just tells us. So instead of telling them, hey, I want you to get 5 closes this month, that's your goal, right? We talk about the actionable item that they have to do. And then we track that on a scorecard. We measure it. If they're having a hard time hitting those metrics and goals, we're going to be able to sit down, teach and train, role play with them and help them execute at a higher level.
So with that retail space, right, where there's the magical marketing that's happening, that's just driving interest, right? Calls, foot traffic, things like that. How do you manage that activity level you're talking about? Instead of the results you want, you're managing activities because that's all you can control. But how do you control that? Let's say it's 4, you know, finance apps a day. but then how do you make sure that your salespeople are getting in front of the right amount of people? Like, how do you manage that?
So that was definitely a progression over 20 years. You know, it used to be Excel tracking documents, and we just had an Excel, a Google Doc for everything. Like, that was where I lived, right? And so over time, what we wanted to do is build scorecards, but we wanted to use technology to do it, right? So when we were working with lead management, you know, if somebody was to call us or if they filled out a form, we didn't have a really robust system in order to execute and drive success with those leads. So we had to go out and look for SaaS products that could help us, you know, and I tried Infusionsoft, Salesforce, and ultimately in the retail space, I'm in the pet space. So it's more fun, right? Like, you want to have a good time. You want to brand yourself in a very entertaining way. So we went with a company called ShopWindow, which helps you send and organize your leads, beautiful content, manage them in funnels, and really stay in touch with them when they're ready. And it would track the number of calls, the number of appointments being booked, the number of closes that were happening. So with my reservation team, I was able to track those metrics. If we make this many outbound calls, if we receive this many calls, we're going to see this much success, right? And then out on the sales floor, when those leads are coming in, it backs into the whole concept of, hey, we need to get four apps. Four apps equals a sale. Well, in my software, FormPiper, what we did, we were using other retail management finance software before, but it seems as if they were built by finance companies, right? And the goal was to drive success for the finance company. And what I needed was a product that was, you know, agnostic to the retailer, right? I'm a business person. I needed it to do certain things. So as we built our platform, we used scorecards to track the number of apps being ran, the approval rate for each individual sales associate, the close ratio for each individual sales associate. So when they came in, we just pull up this digital scorecard now that's up to date, show them where they're at, show them their approval rate. They can compare that approval rate to the entire organization to see if they're above or below, and then really focus on close ratios. You know, in retail, I find people or business owners don't treat the financing aspect of their business like a department of their business. It's just kind of, yeah, well, sure, we offer financing, even though it's 50, 60% of their revenue, right? They're not thinking, I should really put focus on this. I should put goals on this. I should teach my team how to execute at the highest level. And what we found when we were tracking it, before we started teaching and training and role-playing, we were only closing 50% of our financed approvals. That meant 5 out of 10 people were walking out of the door, not making a purchase after they filled that out, right? And when we were able to actually look at that data on an individual level, figure out who was below the 50% and bringing the group down, we were able to teach and train them how to assume sales, you know, and how to really move through that approval process in a great way. And we were able to get our close ratio up to 85%. That's significant when you start talking about how many app, if you're running a lot of applications in your business and getting a lot of approvals, if you can increase 3.5 deals, you know, across the board over the course of the year, you're talking, you know, I mean, it could be millions of dollars. So technology really, really helps organize those things. So for retailers out there that aren't using SaaS products to really help them identify the problems they should be solving, that's what they should be looking for. So anywhere they got a bottleneck, they should be trying to find out which technology platform can help them, you know?
Well, and I think that's an important lesson there that you mentioned and kind of moved past quickly, but there's a lot of times companies are using or required to use for some kind of backend or service provider that's really just a enrollment application fulfillment type of platform, is not a sales platform from a metric conversion tracking percentage to help from the leadership side. And so it's important. That's like trying to play a sport with no, you know, no stats and
right,
a scoreboard at the end of the game, and but you have no idea how it's going until then. With, you know, getting that conversion up, you said things like assuming the sale. What was some of the biggest, I guess, things that you put in from a sales process? If you have, if there's like a sales leader watching or listening to this, or even salespeople, like what were some of the things that just seem potentially small, but really move the needle in the processes that you've found usually need to be fixed?
Yeah. In retail, at first it really means you just have to pay attention to your sales team. You know, when I first got started, I thought I could train somebody one time and then send them on their way. And then they would say everything and they would know everything that I knew from all of my experience and they would be replicas of me, right? And we found that not to be the case. So I would create training videos for each aspect of the business. And if we would track the data based on those divisions of the business, and if somebody was below our expectation, they have to watch the training video. So for us, on every single thing that we do in business, we have an expectation, we have a goal, and we have a stretch goal. So if you're meeting the expectation, you get to work for me, right? I want you to hit your goal. And if you're a go-getter, I want you to hit that stretch goal. But if you're under the expectation, it's my job to come in as the business owner and teach you how to get above that expectation, give you the resources that you need so you can be successful, and just not ignore the fact or just turn and burn somebody because they can't reach it. Now, if I give everybody the tools that they need and they still can't get there, it's just not the right position for them, right? Yeah. So the first thing in retail or any business is to have a training platform set up, right? And there's hundreds of them out there that you can purchase, and then put content in and move people through to be successful from that standpoint. And then, you know, as you divide up your process and divisions, you're going to have certain aspects that you can use or teach or train to help people. So, you know, in the assumption of a sale, you know, if somebody fills out a finance application in your business, they're closed. They've told you that they want to make the purchase. They wouldn't fill out a dissertation of all of their personal information, wait 20 minutes for you to get that approval to come back and say, no, I don't want to make the purchase, right? So as a salesperson, when you have that approval, you just assume the sale. You walk over, you high five, tell them that you got them the $5,000 that you need, and we're going to go pick out some other stuff to go along with your initial purchase, right? You shouldn't be coming out and saying, hey, I got you an approval. Would you still like to make the purchase, right? You do not ask a question that can answer in no when it's time to get the close, right? So I always teach my guys, and I think this is important in every business to figure out what it is for you. But in retail, I was in two businesses. I was in the entertainment business and I was in the education business. So my place of business was fun. Balloons everywhere, music's bumping, right? Clean. I got a staff that's dressed, you know, iron shirts, like presentation, presentation, presentation. We are having a good time in here, right? I'm going to get you in the store and then I'm going to educate on the product that I have available for you. And then I want my customer to make an educated buying decision. If you educate your customers, they'll make the purchase if they feel confident about what you have, right? So I think it's really, really important to be looking at that in all aspects. So in my SaaS business, we kind of do the same thing. You know, it's not as entertaining, right? Because we're doing cold calls and just setting demos. But it's my job when selling that product to educate them the best I can about my product, about my competition's product, what we do differently, how we can help them drive success in their business. And if they see the problem that I know that we're solving, they should make the purchase, you know? And if they're not ready to make the purchase, you know, they'll make it once they continue to identify that problem. So education is key.
What, when you went from the retail business life that you had and that success, evolving it, like you said, over 20 years, right? Like from spreadsheets to this, and then just understanding it to the SaaS business to business cold call focus. What was one of the biggest things or some of the biggest things that surprised you of how different it is? Sales is sales as an umbrella, but then like what was different about the game that you were playing? Or that you do play now on the B2B side?
In retail, it was real simple. Whatever my revenue was, take 7 to 10% of that, put that into Google AdWords, social media, geofencing, SEO, and then that was going to garner me just thousands and thousands and thousands of leads, right? So every time we picked up the phone, they were calling to talk to us about the product that we had for them, right? It was very simple. I just had to have a wonderful script, educate them, invite them down to the business. So when you transition over to B2B, I tried AdWords, I tried social, I tried LinkedIn, I tried all of it, and it just does not garner the leads. And then the leads that are coming in are confused about the ad or maybe what you're offering, you know, because my solution is unique. You know, it's, you know, if you're a retail business owner, you're not going to go to Google and type in, you know, consumer financing management software, right? It's just not something that they're thinking about. You know, they almost don't know they have the problem, right? So you have to be able to educate them in a way that there is a problem that you're here to solve, right? And so the biggest challenge has just been trying to figure out that way to get to the business owner, especially in retail, right? There's 7 days a week, 24/7. You never stop working when you're in retail. And there's, I don't care what business model you're in. As soon as you walk in the door in retail, there's a fire, right? Somebody didn't come into work. Somebody wants to return the merchandise. You got a BBB complaint, like you're saying, like whatever it is, right? There's just endless fires to put out if you're the owner. And so when some sales guy's calling you that you don't know, right? You don't ever have time for that person. You're just not interested at all. So that's been the biggest challenge, is trying to get to these retailers and say, hey, look, you know, I'm a retailer. I know exactly what you're going through. You know, if you listen to my team, right, we will help save you time. We will give your customers a better experience. Your staff will enjoy coming to work more, and everyone will make more money, right? But you know, how do you get to them? So I'm still working on that.
Well, and I'm glad that you pointed that out, and you were so honest about that, because I think that's one of the biggest things where business owners, and I have a lot of clients who will want to do that and think, oh, well, this worked in my other business, so let me just do ads. Or somebody told me they can just do a Google PPC campaign for me, and then that's just going to drive all these inbound leads. And it's like, that's good if you're selling something that the public is aware of, they're searching for it, and it doesn't take much education, right? Even Facebook ads and things like that. Like if it's so out of left field, they're not even thinking about it, the time they're going to spend thinking about it will be so low, they won't get it, right? And they'll just gloss over it. And the ones who do aren't going to make up for it. Your cost per lead is going to be absolutely terrible.
Through the roof.
I appreciate the fact that you're talking about that. Like if you have something that most people aren't thinking about, they don't know that they have a problem. The first step is admitting you have a problem. So many people out there don't even know what that problem is. And they're never going to search for the solution, because also, like you said, especially B2B, everything is on fire, right? Like everything is an emergency. They're dealing with everything. They're generally not spending enough time to stop and think, how do I make a better customer experience? What could I get in place to solve problems I don't know that I have, right?
Yep. I call it the ping pong ball, right? I've worked with so many franchisees over the years. I would do weekend tours at my business, and I would teach the other franchisees what I was doing and how to be successful. And, you know, if you're not operating off of a system, so I was telling you, I use Google Docs. So everything that I had to do for the day was on a document, you know, and what time it needed to be done. And every single employee in my business, no matter who you are, you have a Google Doc and you have exactly what you're supposed to be doing. You got to check it off, right? So that way, if a fire comes in and I got to go put it out, right, I can then go back to my document and figure out where I need to pick back up, right? And most retailers are not doing that. They're just coming in like, hey, it's Tuesday. And then you get smacked like a ping pong ball in the first thing. And then as soon as you stop bouncing, somebody else comes and smacks you. And then you're bouncing all over the place. And every time you stop bouncing, you just get smacked in another direction, right? So it's super important, you know, as an entrepreneur and a business owner, to have a plan, have your day planned every single day. So when you get knocked off track, you can just come right back to the track and keep pushing.
I love it. That's amazing advice that I know most people aren't doing. They might have a to-do list, but not a action plan with steps and timing and stages so that they know how to resume after an interruption or how to reprioritize. So one of the things I see a lot with founders of businesses, people who build something that is a solution. So let's look at like your retail environment, and then now with the B2B SaaS side, right? So two different parts that people could relate to is somebody starts it, let's say like yourself, great at sales, or you figured it out, or you're passionate and excited, and you know what the solution is. You start your Form Piper because you know what it's going to solve for people like you when you were in retail, right? Hands down. I'm sure you get a business owner in front of you, it's a done deal because you know how to do it. How have you found success in taking that out of your head and being the only salesperson to creating a sales process, scripts, a team? Like either what did you find that surprised you with the struggle of doing that? Or what have you found as some of the key ingredients for building a team that isn't just you as the salesperson?
I think what I learned in retail just naturally came over to the SaaS space. So the first thing I did was I just started documenting everything in videos, right? So what's the value of the product? Why was it built? What was the history in getting to where we are today? What's every single feature set? Why did I build the feature set? And then I really always try to focus, I call it like the three pillars, right? So what aspects are giving the customers a better experience? Which ones are giving the staff a better experience? And then how is it going to make me or save me money, right? Because if you can look at a product or a solution and it can do those three things, there's no question you should be doing it, right? Period. You should be actually doing it. If you can, if it does one of those things really, really well, you should do it, right? So if it does all three, you should be signing up and you should be doing it. So I really talk a lot about that with my team, but I just try to document everything because people don't learn through the process of osmosis, right? They don't just get to hang out with me and all of a sudden they know everything that I know. So I got to get it out of my head, put it into a system to where these guys can sit down and go through it. We really try to record all the demos we do, the trainings we do, right? I just did an hour training with a 22 chain group the other day and taught them about the scorecard and why it was so important. And then boom, I immediately take that video, drop it to the team. So everybody can see like, oh, okay, I understand now why Brad built the scorecard for scale, right? Because when you start to scale your business and you go from one location to two, that's a challenge. Go from two to four. You're like, why did I do this? You get above 10, you've got to have good systems and processes in place, right? And so being able to show the team at scale why things work as well just helps them understand how it works for everybody, right? Because usually most people that have one location do have aspirations to go to another location, you know? So, I just think it's all about documenting, and then making sure it's very easy for the team to kind of plug in and just spend time with everybody and always talk about business. And, you know, I think it's a little unique for me because I was in retail for 20 years and now we're in the business of helping retailers, right? And I've helped retailers almost my entire career. That's the fun part about work, right? It's like, who else is in the same boat as me? Let me show you what I'm doing. You tell me what you're doing. Like everything that I do was stolen, right, by somebody else. They had the idea. I was genius. And, you know, I'll come in and put it into my system. I think the key part, and, you know, once you find some people that are passionate about what we're doing, you know, they buy into it and they dive in and they want to help retailers. It's been pretty easy to kind of get some people on the team. We got a small sales team though, right now. You know, I've got two account executives that are really, really solid, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 SDRs and a CSM right now. So I'd say we're in our infancy of growing that sales team, you know, really trying to bring value into one space and really learn that space. And then as we do that, we'll kind of compound out and grow. So it's not that hard when you only have to work with 5 or 6 people. When you go from 150 people to 6 people, it's a piece of cake.
That's true, right? Like everything in life is relative. You had multiple 4 locations, 150 plus employees down to, 6, 7, 8, less than 10. It definitely feels manageable. You brought up recruiting and finding passionate people. But one of the biggest challenges I see is that business owners, founders, usually the creator of something, they're passionate about it. Like listening to you talk, and when we spoke before, like I just knew it. Like you're passionate about it because you lived your life as a retailer. You helped retail business owners for a long time in locations. That's just who you are. And you want to help them succeed. And so it's easy for you, right? Obviously, you're passionate about it. Most founders are passionate about it. They can close deals even without sales skills because their passion will exude and the person, right? The potential client will want to get on board. But then it's tough to translate that to other people. How do you find success in getting people that become passionate, or how have you found to select people who have as much passion as they can considering they're not the founder?
Yeah, it's a challenge, right? The first thing I try to do, you know, in the interview process and then just working with the team when they come on board is to figure out what it is they're passionate about, right? You know, because for me growing up, you know, in all the line, I've always been a salesperson. And so the reason I was in sales is because I wanted to do a transaction that gave me money, right? Even when I was a kid, you know, I used to sell golf balls on the golf course, candy to kids. So it was all about transactional. I knew people had money. I needed to get the money. So for me, the motivation is money. I want to figure out how to run and grow a business to where it turns a profit, right? And salespeople, when you hire them, typically that's their motivator. But some people, it's not the motivator. Some people, it's, you know, a certain culture in the business, or it's, you know, they really appreciate that time off and the vacations, you know, and they're going to use every day that you give them. And that's great, you know. So finding out what they're interested in first, so I can make sure I tailor make the journey for them to where they're able to accomplish their personal goals. Because if they're not excited about what they're doing for themselves, they're not going to be excited about trying to help your business grow or any other business grow, right? To that fact, right? So first step, make sure that the team's happy, create a culture around them that where they can hit their goals. And then really the only way you're going to get people passionate about your product is to be passionate about your product, right? So yeah. If I'm not happy about what I'm doing, then my team's not going to be happy, right? But if I'm jumping in and doing trainings and leading the morning calls and talking about why we did this and why we did that, and people can feel that enthusiasm, right? That's going to carry over into the team, and they're going to be able to take that to the people that could be potentially clients, you know? So I guess my advice there would be, if you're a founder or a business owner and you don't like what you're doing, you know, just change gears.
or what happens sometimes too, that I see, is that a business owner, founder, they start growing, and they're really good at one thing, right? If anyone's familiar with the E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber, it's usually that technician that founds a company because they're really good at X, right? Building websites or building a widget. And then they have to deal with sales and marketing and accounting and customer service and all these things. And then it's not that they don't like the business anymore. It's just they're pulled in so many different directions that they're not happy and bubbly and excited all the time, because now they're, like you said, dealing with fires from the moment they walk in the door, wake up and look at their phone. And so like, it's dispersed among everything versus like, I'm so excited, this is great, let's do it. Again, without knowing you extensively well, I can imagine coming from the world that you did in retail where there is lots of fires, but you had a system in place, so you were structured versus just a firefighter all day, to now having what you do now. I'm sure no matter what fires come up, you're like, this is nothing. Like, let's keep going. Like, this is easy for us to manage because it's, you know, it's all relative and you've built up the skills over time.
To that point, I was blessed, right? So about 8 or 9 years ago, I met my business partner of today, Ryan Munson. And so we started a finance company and a marketing company together while I was doing the retail. And so he paid a close attention to what I was doing. And this was right when I was starting to help franchisees and really starting to just, you know, create that culture of just helping everyone drive success. And he was like, Brad, you have to repeat yourself too much. You know, he's like, we have to build you a learning center. We need to put systems and processes around you. You cannot just keep saying the same things over and over and over and over and over again. So he helped me create my first learning center for the staff. I built 150 videos to teach everybody. And he just understood the systems. So the CRM systems, the compliance issues, the security issues, like everything that I do not like to do, he likes to do, right? So together, we've been able to grow and scale the companies because, like you said, like if I had to focus on FormPiper's compliance and security, like, kill me now, right? Like, I'm just not interested. It's going to bog down my day. I want to talk to a retailer. Like, that's what I want to do. Right? So yeah, I think having... always being able to identify where you're not strong and immediately trying to either partner with or hire people that can do the things that you don't want to do. I do not want to make 100 cold calls a day. It's not in my DNA. I cannot do it, right? But I got great people on my team that love to make 100 phone calls a day, right? You know, so you got to identify where you're weak and fill those gaps.
And that's where the book I mentioned, E-Myth Revisited, if people haven't read it, this, I'm just going to plug it because it's a great book. It showed me what business should be like so long ago that's been kind of the foundation for me, but it's about the entrepreneurial myth. And it's basically talking about what you're saying here, Brad, is that, you know, what are you good at? What do you want to do all day? And stop doing the other stuff as soon as you can. Get others to do it, build systems, build processes. Because when you spend your time doing the other things you don't like to do, it's just going to feel miserable. And you're going to end up with just a terrible job that you don't like instead of the business that you want to do and the things that you want to do. So I think that's great.
That's a great book. I've read that book. I would highly recommend the book as well. It just helps you understand how to build that team, right? And think about it differently. And you got to be willing to just let other people do, you know, like I don't want to do everything. Let's put some strong people in place and let's be a team and let's come up with a plan and let's execute. Yeah.
And sometimes it's a temporary fractional outside solution, right? To get you to that point where you can do it responsibly and then build it internally. Maybe it's hiring the right people. You know, like you're talking about, I love the fact that you're talking about that your partner that you had or that you have. So I have so much stuff. There's so many more questions. I'm really excited to talk about you as a kid and sales because it's so opposite me. When we first chatted, we were talking about how my journey is so different than yours. I also really want to talk about something before we hit record. We were talking about other salespeople making it hard for everyone else that's trying to help people out there in the world. I want to know where you see business sales going and then where you've seen it changing. So we're going to save that for part two for the after show. For now, for people tuning in here, I know that your website, you mentioned it many times, if people are in the retail space, they want to check this out no matter what, go to formpiper.com. Great place to go for that. And then also if they want to chat with you, they want to connect with you, you're on LinkedIn. So Brad Parker, and I don't know how many Brad Parkers there are on there, but Brad Parker and Form Piper, I know that they'll find you. The links will be in the show notes as well. Any other fun stuff going on? Any other places you want people to check out, you know, if they're interested?
No, right. That's a one-stop shop right now. Just go over to formpiper.com and fill out a form and one of the team members or maybe myself will reach out and we can talk about driving success.
Perfect. I love it. Brad, thanks for being on this and sharing all this. Like I said, in the beginning, I knew this was going to be fun because the retail space is something I'm familiar with as a customer, but not as a, you know, from a sales internal perspective. So it's fun to hear the similarities and the differences. And so I appreciate you being on here.
Yeah, it was definitely an honor. Appreciate it.
And hang on. We're going to end this one and then we're going to get into the after show. For everyone tuning in, I appreciate you being here, being a part of the journey, whether you're watching the video, you're listening to the podcast, the replay, and being a part of my goal to help shift sales from being a dirty word into something that the world actually trusts and respects. Brad and I are going to talk about that in part two for sure. While also the goal of this is to help you close more deals and make more money in an authentic way. Until next time, thank you for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.